Good afternoon. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land I'm speaking to you from today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I also pay my respect to their elders, past and present, and any First Nations people with us today. It's a pleasure to be here today with you, albeit virtually, and I want to thank the Australian Securitisation Forum for their invitation. This has been a turbulent 2 years for everyone, including for financial market participants. Previous downturns have taught us just how important it is that funding continues to flow to households and businesses through banks and securities markets. When security markets aren't working well, this ultimately weighs on employment and economic activity. And securities markets are, of course, key to the transmission of monetary policy. This is also true for the unconventional monetary policy measures that the Reserve Bank has deployed since March 2020. Today, I'll be talking about how markets for non-government securities have weathered the past 20 months, and how this has affected both the availability and cost of funding for Australian businesses and households. I'll also talk about a few things that we'll be watching in securities markets over the coming months and years. Securities markets play an important role in the Australian economy. Let's have a look at the composition of funding sources for different types of businesses. Both debt securities in blue and listed equity funding in orange are sourced through securities markets. Now, you can see in the first column that non-financial corporations source one-third of their funding from listed equity markets. The funding via debt securities is relatively small, at less than 10%. This reflects the large role of the banking system in Australia, as bank loans account for most of corporations' debt. The second column shows Australian banks' funding. Banks source most of their funding from deposits. But around one-fifth of banks' total funding comes from debt securities markets, domestically and offshore. And there are, of course, non-bank lenders, which rely heavily on debt securities markets to fund the loans they originate. One function of securities markets that I'd like to highlight is the role in the transmission of monetary policy. The cash rate is an anchor for interest rates in other markets, including securities markets, and so is a key determinant of the cost of funds for banks and other lenders. This, in turn, influences the interest rates paid by households and businesses on their loans. And for many large businesses, the cost of equity and some debt is determined directly in securities markets. During periods of volatility, functioning of these markets can become strained and so impede the transmission of monetary policy. In particular, the effect of lower risk-free rates from policy easing on overall financial conditions can be offset if risk premiums increase sharply. Also, banks may reduce new credit if they're uncertain about the availability and cost of their funding. And if firms are unable to obtain funding from banks or securities markets, they may be forced to reduce employment and investment. All this highlights the importance of market functioning during times of stress. These lessons from previous episodes of financial turbulence were at the forefront of our minds when the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic began to play out in financial markets. So how did markets react as the pandemic unfolded? Concerns around the economic impact quickly became evident in equity markets. On 16 March 2020, 5 days after the World Health Organization declared a pandemic, the ASX 200 declined by 10%. This was the largest one-day fall in over 30 years. As you can see here, this wasn't just an Australian story. The S&P 500 declined by 12% on the same day. During this entire period, turnover in equity markets was very high. Concerns were also evident in corporate bond markets. Bank and non-financial corporate bond spreads began to widen in mid-March, as you can see here. This reflected a reassessment of credit risks on top of general selling pressures as fund managers faced increasing redemptions. With a much greater number of market participants wishing to sell than buy, market makers ended up holding a lot of inventory and bid-ask spreads increased substantially. Similar issues arose in the market for asset-backed securities, where selling by offshore investors was particularly heavy. Around the same time, policymakers in Australia and around the world announced a broad range of actions to support the economy. In Australia, the federal and state governments implemented several stimulus policies targeted at businesses and households, notably JobKeeper, to cushion the impact of movement restrictions. On 19 March, the Reserve Bank Board announced a package of policy measures to keep funding costs low across the economy and to ensure credit remained available. The aim of the measures was also to promote functioning of key financial markets. These measures included a lower cash rate, a target on the three-year government bond yield, bond purchases to address market dysfunction, and the term funding facility. And the Australian Office of Financial Management announced it would provide support to securitisation and warehouse markets. This would assist small banks and non-bank lenders that couldn't access the TFF. Conditions in financial markets began to stabilise shortly after, in late March. The ASX 200 reached a nadir on 23rd March, around the same time as the S&P 500. Bank bond spreads, along with bid-ask spreads, started to decline in early April as risk premiums declined. And non-financial corporate bond spreads started to fall in early May. By late 2020, both bank and non-financial corporate bond spreads and yields had reached very low levels relative to history. Overall, the adjustment in pricing as the COVID-19 pandemic spread was sharp, but also brief. In contrast, during the global financial crisis, volatility in equity prices stayed elevated for several quarters, as did risk premiums for bonds and equities. I'll now turn to developments in primary securities markets, focusing first on the banking sector. Banks didn't tap securities markets to any significant extent as the pandemic unfolded. In part, this was because the Reserve Bank provided repo funding through its daily liquidity operations at attractive rates and on longer terms than usual, as uncertainty increased in March 2020. It also provided three-year funding via the TFF from early April. The aim of the TFF was to lower funding costs for banks and encourage them to continue lending at the height of the pandemic, benefiting all households and businesses. Now, banks have historically held a significant presence in the Australian non-government bond market. But the availability of both the TFF and ample low-cost deposit inflows meant that banks required less new funding from this market for an extended period. And you can see this trend clearly here. Bond issuance was well below the average of previous years until quite recently, after the TFF closed to new drawdowns in June this year. You can also see that larger banks did continue to issue Tier 2 hybrids. Issuance in mid-2020 achieved spreads close to 2019 levels, and later issuance was at narrower spreads. I'll now turn to non-bank lenders. Non-bank lenders rely heavily on securities markets. They use warehouse facilities to fund the origination of loans and then package the loans into asset-backed securities to be sold to investors. In the uncertainty of the early stages of the pandemic, many investors tried to sell their holdings of ABS, creating an overhang in the secondary market. Now, this raised questions about the market's ability to absorb new issuance and, in turn, non-bank lenders' ability to fund new lending. If market conditions had not improved, non-bank lenders might have responded to their lack of funding by tightening their lending standards or increasing their interest rates so as to slow the flow of new loans. Ultimately, this turned out not to be necessary. And to the extent that it did occur, it didn't last for long. Now, market conditions improved, at least in part, because of the Structured Finance Support Fund, through which the OFM invested in public and private securitization markets. This participation reassured investors that deals were likely to be a success and helped to restore confidence in the market. You can see here that volumes of ABS issuance by non-bank lenders picked up by the second half of 2020. And you can also see that it has remained high throughout 2021. The most recent quarter has seen a record volume of non-bank lender issuance. Spreads have also narrowed to their lowest level since 2007. The low levels of bond issuance by banks have reportedly contributed to these narrow spreads, as investors moved into residential mortgage-backed securities instead. So what about non-financial businesses? Non-financial businesses first turned to banks for liquidity. Facing a potential decline in cash flow, some firms temporarily drew down existing lines of credit and some sought higher credit limits as a precaution. The TFF supported banks in providing business credit in particular. Most businesses had repaid these temporary drawdowns by mid-2020. In late March 2020, listed firms began to raise equity in large volumes. Firms issued equity primarily to increase liquidity and to shore up their balance sheets. As you can see here, activity was dominated by firms in the other category, which includes sectors such as industrials, real estate, and consumer discretionary. These sectors had some of the largest initial share price falls. Several non-financial firms postponed bond issuance that they had planned for February and March 2020. In addition to the general increase in spreads, there was a high degree of uncertainty about how much funding firms could raise and at what price. In May 2020, the Reserve Bank broadened the range of eligible collateral for open market operations to include non-bank bonds with an investment-grade credit rating, rather than just AAA-rated bonds. This change in policy aimed to assist with the smooth functioning of Australia's private sector bond markets. Liaison suggests that the change boosted sentiment among some issuers, although it's difficult to quantify the effect on issuance or pricing. In any case, corporate bond issuance in the domestic market started to pick up soon after the Reserve Bank announced the change. As you can see here, in 2020 as a whole, bond issuance by non-financial corporations in the domestic market, in the top panel, was above the average of the past decade. You can also see in yellow that roughly half of the issuance in 2020 was at a tenor of 10 years or more, which is a much greater share than usual. It's worth noting that the domestic corporate bond market recovered more quickly than it did after the global financial crisis. Then, issuance didn't recover until the second half of 2009. This brings me to the end of my discussion of Australian securities markets through the pandemic. I'd now like to turn to the future and discuss a few areas in securities markets that we at the RBA will be keeping an eye on over the coming months and years. One area of focus stems from the current historically very low interest rates. Now, asset prices increase when risk-free rates are low, and this is part of the monetary transmission mechanism. But as we've highlighted in recent financial stability reviews, over time, it also raises the prospect of search for yield behavior. This is where investors bid up the price of risky assets to the extent that risk may no longer be adequately priced. This in turn increases the risk of a sharp correction down the road. So it's important to closely monitor risk premiums to judge whether asset prices appear to be sensibly valued. While bond spreads are currently around their lowest level in over a decade, it's difficult to know whether this isn't aligned with fundamentals, and measures of equity risk premiums remain within their typical range. Another area of focus will be possible changes in supply and demand in securities markets as the committed liquidity facility is being phased out. Now, over the past 2 years, the stock of government debt has increased sharply, funding the fiscal response to the economic effects of the pandemic. This increase in high-quality liquid assets has allowed APRA to phase out the use of the CLF over the coming year. This facility, which is provided by the RBA, allows banks to hold collateral other than HQLA, including bank bonds and RMBS, to fulfill their required liquidity coverage ratio. So, given the changes in the committed liquidity facility, banks might decrease their holdings of these securities. At the same time, banks are likely to increase their holdings of HQLA, which could be funded in part by increased bond issuance. A third area of focus is the bank bond market and the refinancing of the TFF. As you can see here, the TFF maturities in yellow are large and concentrated in the quarters of September 23 and June 24. Now, banks can meet this refinancing task in a number of ways, including, of course, sources of funding such as deposits. But it's likely that they will raise a sizable amount of funds from bond markets to repay TFF funding. If banks issued new debt to replace all TFF drawdowns in the quarter of maturity, this would require quarterly issuance as a share of assets at levels not seen in over a decade. However, in liaison, banks have indicated plans to issue bonds earlier than scheduled TFF maturities, in other words, pre-fund them. Banks can also repay TFF funding early without any additional cost. These strategies would allow banks to spread the refinancing task over a period of time and would reduce the effect of refinancing on market conditions. This brings me to the end of my talk today. Concerns around the economic effects of COVID-19 and the associated rise in uncertainty caused a sharp adjustment in securities prices, although the period of volatility was brief. Risk premiums have increased in the initial phase by much less than during the global financial crisis and were elevated for a shorter period. Public policies have played a large role in ensuring that markets continue to function well. Fiscal and monetary policies have also played a large role in cushioning the economic impact on households and businesses. In particular, the Reserve Bank's package of measures has lowered funding costs across the economy and supported the availability of credit for households and businesses. Thank you.
Thanks, Marian, for that comprehensive analysis of the last 2 years of the pandemic. We have a few audience questions that I'd like to pose to you, if you wouldn't mind, before the time is up. Perhaps let's start off with the first one. You said that the lessons from the previous episodes of financial turbulence were at the forefront of your minds during the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic as it played out in the financial markets. What learnings from the past did you apply in handling the crisis?
So there's obviously many lessons you can draw. There's many crises. So I just want to focus on 3 years in the interest of time. I guess the most important lesson is actually every crisis is different. And so that means you really need to set out with flexibility and tailor the tools to the challenges at hand. And this time around, our challenge was really the very low interest rate at the outset of the pandemic. The second lesson is when financial markets don't function well, that has real effects for employment and activity. So it's really important that the policy response is sizable and coordinated and is quick to shore up confidence. And that was the third of the many lessons that I want to highlight.
Thank you. We have a few more audience questions that have come through. Talking about liquidity, would the RBA be supportive of Australian dollar covered bonds being classified as HQLA2 assets for liquidity purposes? Do you have a view on this?
So the decision on what is HQLA is with APRA, that's my understanding. And so I think I'll leave that to them. I think they usually have to go through analysis. And of course, for HQLA, it is the analysis needs to include whether you've got deep and liquid markets that can withstand periods of disruption as a resort. And so I'll leave it to them to ponder on that.
All right, thanks. We have another one. You may have actually already touched on this, but it's worth just expanding. Does the RBA anticipate a smaller domestic market for ADI issuance because of the zero CLF? Do you anticipate that meaning a larger funding gap in the market?
Yeah. So as I indicated, there's actually two things going in both directions. So yes, there's a little bit that's less, that you can't transfer with us easily into HQLA to count against it. But of course, also banks will actually need to fund more HQLA on their own books. And for that, they may need to issue more bonds. So it's a question on how they would fund that HQLA that previously was replaced by the CLF. So it's an open question. There's pressures in both directions.
I think we've got time for another. Does the RBA expect to see more differential developing in demand and thus pricing for bond issuers based on ESG considerations?
Look, that's an interesting question. I think I'll really refer you to speeches by the Deputy Governor on that. I think it is an issue he's very much interested in. And as you would have seen, we're very much interested in seeing how the market develops. Like always, these are supply and demand considerations. So I think it would be premature for me to speculate here how that evolves.
Right, thank you. We don't have any more audience questions, but thank you very much for your time today. It was great of you to join the ASF, and we appreciate your time. Thank you. Thanks, Marian.
Thank you very much for having me.